for your continued support. Love, CKUT.
Pour lutter contre la COVID-19, on doit tous respecter les consignes d'isolement de la santé publique jusqu'au bout. Quand on a des symptômes, on doit s'isoler. Quand on a passé un test, on doit s'isoler. Quand le résultat est positif, on doit s'isoler. Quand on revient de voyage, on doit s'isoler. Et si on a été en contact avec un cas confirmé, on doit s'isoler. S'isoler, c'est sérieux. S'il vous plaît, faites-le. Informations sur québec.ca/isolement. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
From New York, this is Democracy Now.
They was up there like doing whatever they was doing to me. Hitting me, throwing me, macing me. My son, the look on his face, like he was petrified. The Philadelphia Police Department treated me as if I was an animal on the street. An animal don't even deserve that.
In Philadelphia, a black mother who was attacked with her family by a horde of police officers is speaking out about the harrowing experience. Rekia Young was driving an SUV with her 2-year-old hard-of-hearing son and a teenage nephew when officers descended on the vehicle, broke all its windows, assaulted and arrested Young, pulled her 16-year-old nephew from the car, and grabbed her child. We'll hear Rekia in her own words and speak to her attorney. Then we look at how the ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft scored a major victory against worker rights with the passage of Proposition 22 in California. They're now pushing similar measures in other states.
With this passage, this law will now exempt drivers like me from basic protections afforded to most other workers in the state. And in the aftermath of this bought and paid for victory, these companies are promising to roll out this model nationwide. And it foretells a grim future for gig workers across the country.
We'll also look at other ballot initiatives around the country. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States confirmed more than 200,000 new coronavirus infections Monday and more than 1,500 new deaths, capping the deadliest week of the U.S. outbreak since April. Nearly 16,000 people have died of COVID-19 across the United States in just the last week alone. Public health officials warn the worst could be yet to come. This is top infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci.
What we have now is a challenge ahead of us of the bleak months of December and January, where we have a baseline of infections that literally is breaking records every day with regard to number of infections, number of hospitalizations, and numbers of deaths. The numbers are really stunning. We can do something about it, but that's something right now is public health measures.
U.S. hospitalizations are at a record high, with more than 102,000 COVID-19 patients filling beds. Intensive care units and hospitals from coast to coast are rapidly filling to capacity. New Mexico's governor warns doctors may soon have to ration care. Executives with the drug makers Pfizer and Moderna have declined an invitation to meet at the White House today for what President Trump is billing a vaccine summit. The event appears to be an effort by Trump to pressure the Food and Drug Administration to rapidly approve the drug company's COVID-19 vaccines. The FDA is currently reviewing data from Pfizer's clinical trials and could allow emergency use of its vaccine by the end of the week. This comes as the New York Times reports the Trump administration turned down an offer by Pfizer last summer to lock in supplies of its coronavirus vaccine, giving other countries a chance to get in line ahead of the U.S. for the drug's limited initial supply. This morning, the United Kingdom began administering its first doses of Pfizer's vaccine to elderly residents. 90-year-old grandmother Margaret Keenan was first in line.
I'm happy it's happened, and now I've done it, and hopefully it'll help other people come along and do as I did, you know, try and do the best to get rid of this terrible thing.
The second person who is given the vaccine was named William Shakespeare. Meanwhile, there are new questions about the rollout of vaccines in the U.S. The Wall Street Journal reports Pfizer expects to ship half as many doses of its vaccine as planned in 2020. And the medical news site Stat reports frontline U.S. healthcare workers think the Trump administration's pledge to vaccinate 20 million people in December seems unrealistic. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Homeland Security Chair, Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson, has invited members of a fringe medical association to testify on the coronavirus pandemic. The lead witness, Dr. Jane Orient, has expressed anti-vaccine views and has pushed the use of hydroxychloroquine, the anti-malaria drug once promoted by President Trump, which can cause heart rhythm problems and showed no benefit in treating COVID-19. Another witness testifying today, Dr. Ramin Askwi, has falsely claimed masks and social distancing don't work at combating the spread of coronavirus. In economic news, Congress is poised to pass a spending bill to avoid a government shutdown as negotiations continue for emergency coronavirus relief. Senate Republicans have offered a limited $908 billion coronavirus relief bill that's far short of the more than $3 trillion stimulus package passed by House Democrats in May. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is warning other members of the Democratic caucus not to support a Republican-backed measure that would shield corporations from liability if they expose workers or customers to COVID-19. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports millions of people who lost their jobs during the pandemic will owe an average of over $5,800 in back rent and utilities by January, as debt to landlords could reach a total of $70 billion after a federal moratorium on evictions expires December 31st. This comes as housing and economic justice activists warn of mass evictions. President-elect Joe Biden's reportedly preparing to pick retired General Lloyd Austin to be as Secretary of Defense. If confirmed, Austin would become the first African-American to head the Pentagon. Austin's the former chief of U.S. Central Command, where he oversaw U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. After retiring in 2016, he joined the board of Raytheon, became a partner in Pine Island Capital Partners, a venture capital fund focused on military-related companies. General Austin will need a legal waiver from Congress to take the position due to laws designed to preserve the civilian control of the military. The selection of Austin is being seen as a victory for anti-war groups who fought against the possible selection of Michelle Flournoy as defense secretary due to her past support of wars in Iraq, Libya, and other countries. CNN reports President Trump called the Speaker of Pennsylvania House of Representatives multiple times over the past week, asking him to overturn the results of the 2020 election. It's at least the third state where Trump has tried to have lawmakers ignore the will of voters in order to send an alternate Electoral College slate to formally pick the new president in January. Trump remains unsuccessful in his effort. Today is the so-called safe harbor deadline for states to certify their election results. On Monday, Georgia's Republican Secretary of State recertified Joe Biden's win after a recount requested by the Trump campaign. Gabriel Sterling, Georgia's voting implementation manager, blasted Trump's legal team for spreading selectively edited videos falsely implying election workers had rigged the election.
What's really frustrating is the president's attorneys had this same videotape. They saw the exact same things the rest of us could see, and they chose to mislead state senators and the public about what was on that video.
Nearly 1,500 lawyers from around the U.S. have signed an open letter to the American Bar Association condemning Rudy Giuliani and other Trump campaign lawyers for subverting democracy, saying they could be disbarred for violating their oath to the U.S. Constitution. The lawyers write, quote, "A license to practice law is not a license to lie," unquote. Giuliani was hospitalized with COVID-19 Sunday after he consistently refused to wear a mask or practice social distancing in multiple public appearances around the United States. Both chambers of Arizona's state legislature and Michigan's House of Representatives have suspended work following Giuliani's positive test after lawmakers came in close contact with Giuliani and his team. Michigan's Secretary of State says dozens of armed Trump supporters gathered outside her home Saturday evening demanding she overturn Joe Biden's electoral win in Michigan. Jocelyn Benson says she was putting up Christmas decorations with her son when the armed group began making loud and threatening demands that she, quote, stop the steal, unquote, echoing rhetoric spread by President Trump. Benson spoke on CNN Monday.
As someone who started my career investigating hate groups and hate crimes, I've seen firsthand how hateful words and rhetoric, particularly from leaders in positions of power, can lead to hateful actions by followers.
In October, the FBI arrested over a dozen far-right militia members accused of plotting to kidnap and murder Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. In Florida, armed police raided the home of Rebecca Jones Monday. She's the data scientist who was forced to resign in May as the lead software developer for Florida's coronavirus data portal after she refused to censor information about Florida's COVID-19 outbreak. Police seized her computers, pointed guns at her children. Jones posted video of the raid on Twitter.
Police, come down now.
Bring your children.
Rebecca Jones accused Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis of sending the Gestapo after her. She wrote on Twitter, quote, "This is what happens to scientists who do their job honestly. This is what happens to people who speak truth to power," she said. Florida authorities said the raid was part of a probe into a recent hack of the Florida Health Department's website, but Jones said she has not had access to the site in 6 months. In environmental news, the Trump administration's rejected setting tougher standards on industrial soot emissions, despite evidence linking the deadly air pollutant to increasing COVID-19 deaths and other respiratory illnesses. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Andrew Wheeler made the decision ignoring his own scientists at the EPA, who found strengthening the emissions rule could save up to 34,000 lives a year. And Melinda Coleman, the mother of late sexual assault survivor and advocate Daisy Coleman, died by apparent suicide Sunday, 4 months after Daisy's death by suicide. Melinda was 58 years old. Melinda's passing was announced by the group SAFE, BAE, a youth-led organization co-founded by her daughter Daisy, raising awareness on sexual assault in middle and high schools. In a statement, the group said, quote, "The bottomless grief of losing her husband Tristan and Daisy was more than she could face most days," unquote. Melinda's son Tristan was killed in a car crash 2 years ago. In 2016, Democracy Now! Interviewed Melinda at the Sundance Film Festival, where Daisy described her harrowing experience with sexual assault in the Netflix documentary Audrey and Daisy.
"I'm really proud of her. I think she's been incredibly strong, and I just think she's a great person, and I'm so happy she's in my life, and she's my hero."
To see our full interview with Melinda and Daisy Coleman, you can go to democracynow.org. They have both now died by suicide. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday, there will be flurries and a high of 1 degree Celsius. Thursday, there will be a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 3 degrees Celsius. Friday, the same. Saturday, it will be cloudy with a high of 4 degrees Celsius. Sunday, there will be mixed precipitation and a high of 5 degrees Celsius. Monday, it will be cloudy with sunny breaks and a high of minus 1 degrees Celsius. Tuesday, it will be mainly sunny with a high of minus 4 degrees Celsius. Well, that wraps up the show for today. Stay safe, be well, and keep listening to CKUT.
I had to leave the country. Some nice folk there. And now I don't know where I'm going. All I know is I'll hit the ground running. Don't know where I'm going.
of a Wizard of Oz. We hear he is the Wizard of Wiz, if ever a Wiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a Wiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one. Because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
To Oz?
To Oz.
We go to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Here he is, the Wizard of a Wiz, if ever a Wiz there was. If ever, or ever a Wiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one. Because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you. The cracked bells and washed out horns blow into my face with scorn, but it's not that way, I wasn't born to lose you. I want you, I want you, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. They've gone down, true love, they've been without it. But all their daughters put me down, cause I don't think about it. Well, I return to the Queen of Spades and talk with my chambermaid. She knows it, she's not afraid to look at her. She is good to me, and there's nothing she doesn't see. She knows where I'd like to be, but it doesn't matter. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now your dancing child with his Chinese suit, he spoke to me, I took his flute. No, I wasn't very cute to him, was I? But I did it because you lied, and because he took you for a ride. Because time is on his side, and because I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad.
Thank you.
Wears a mask.
My art wears a mask.
My art wears a mask.
This is a special series by Ravel.ca with emerging artists talking about their challenges and successes during this time of the pandemic.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of Ravel.ca's series My Art Wears a Mask. I'm Victoria Fenner. Today we're going to hear two conversations with two classical musicians and also some really fabulous music. Today's guests are both string players. Maxime Despax is a viola player whose family home is in Gatineau, Quebec, and he's studying in Toronto right now. Yannick Campbell is a violinist who was born in Cuba. She's studying at the Glenn Gould Studio of the Royal Conservatory of Music, also in Toronto. Musicians are especially hard hit by the pandemic. Live music, which is the lifeblood of most performers, has come to a standstill. What you'll hear from both of our guests today are stories of adaptability. And in case you're wondering how music is happening, it's happening in the virtual space. Our guests have some insights about how that all works, too.
Music is about sharing and experiencing with other people what you're doing. But now this has been taken away, so you have to motivate yourself, inspire yourself all the time, which is doable, but exhausting.
I'm glad, you know, like the government has taken all those, you know, like have put all those restrictions in place to protect us. And that's, you know, what needs to be done.
That was an excerpt from a piece of music that Maxime Despax and composer Benjamin Harry Sajo gave us permission to play. It's called Love Song, Prelude for Viola. It's just a sample. After the interview's over, we'll play the whole piece for you. Promise. But first, let's hear from Maxime. Maxime is from Gatineau, Quebec, and plays in a number of ensembles, or at least he did before the pandemic, including a string quartet comprised of Maxime and his three brothers and sisters. The ensemble was formed in 2003, and before the pandemic, they played concerts in Canada and in Europe. I'll let Maxime start the conversation by telling us about his music.
Yeah, so basically, I'm a violist. I'm a performer, mainly. I'm also a student still. I study at U of T doing my DMA doctorate in viola. And I also have two quartets, one in with my family members. We're together since 2003. And we have a series of concerts that we do at Gatineau, my hometown. And then we gig around and play concerts around too in America and also outside the country. I also have another quartet, interior string quartet, that were based in Toronto, and that's because I'm in Toronto and a bunch of friends, we gig around with the quartet as well. before COVID, I had multiple concerts and gigs planned, but they got all canceled. Since then, I have maybe done one or two concerts, and they weren't even with my quartet. They were with pickup groups that were able to live stream together. But other than that, it's very weird to not be able to perform a lot. It's a real tough times for performers, especially because we have to either live stream or do recordings. That's pretty much what we can do. During COVID, what happened is that I got a friend who gave my name to some people from actually BC, and they were like looking for players that would love to record a certain piece. It was for piano and orchestra. So what they did, the pianist, it was for two piano and orchestra, the pianist played their part and recorded it together. And then they sent that part to everybody. And individually, we listened to the track. And while we were listening to the track, we also recorded our part with their part. So everybody sent their own recording, and then someone did the mixing. So that's what happened during COVID, right?
So what is that experience like for you as a performer, performing in isolation to a click track rather than being there with other musicians?
Definitely different. It's not like I haven't done it before. It's not anything new. It's just the only thing we can do. That's what I think bothers, or rather saddened, most musicians. Because music is about sharing and experiencing with other people what you're doing. But now this has been taken away, so you have to motivate yourself, inspire yourself all the time, which is doable, but exhausting. And I remember when I got a concert about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was a small concert with a trio with two other people. And, you know, a trio is not like violin, viola, and cello. And trio is not a big formation. We don't often play in that formation. But when we did that concert, I remember the two other members, they were, I was also thrilled because it's the first time in so long that we performed for people and the energy was there. There was energy to feed off from. But when you're alone, and in my case, living in your basement and recording and trying to practice, it's very difficult to get that sense of motivation or inspiration.
Right. So when you did that live concert just a couple of weeks ago, what was your positioning like on the stage? Did you have to alter where you sit and how you interact with each other?
Yeah, that's funny because we had to keep the six feet apart. Because we were not in the same bubble. And when we rehearsed the same thing, we had to rehearse in a big space. And funny enough, you know, we would never play like that in real life. But we were really happy to play together. And it also made it for us to listen more for each other. Because in music, you know, when you play in a group, you know, your ears are the most important thing. You want to listen to what the other people say, do and play, so you can react and have some kind of like chemistry with them. But because we were so far apart, we had to pay even more attention. So it was, in the sense of a good experience, it just wasn't comfortable at all. But it was still like something that we really enjoyed to do.
Right. Well, what about the experience for the audience?
There was an audience because it was a very big church and they allowed only, I think, 20 to 30 people to come in. But like the church could hold up at least 500 or 1,000 people. So there was only 20 people in that church. It was good for us because seeing people, you know, we can feel that energy. The only thing is that it feels like the audience also forgot how to be an audience, because when we went on stage, you know, usually you go in and then people clap and then you bow. And then after that, you sit down and play, right? And they clap. They stop clapping after you sit down. Well, when we went in, nobody clapped. Should we bow? So we still did. We bowed. And then the organizer, who was like at the second floor of the church, she started clapping to make sure that people understood that they could clap. So after that, they clapped. With everything happening with COVID, especially for us musicians, we don't know what we can do. So we're like, should we do this? Should we do that? I'm not going to do anything just to make sure I don't break any rules.
Right, but there are no rules anymore, it seems like sometimes, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So what about the economics of the situations now? Because, you know, how on earth can musical organizations continue to support themselves if they can only have small audiences? Do you have any thoughts on that?
For people that are members of big organizations like big orchestras, it's a bit easier for them because they have like, I don't know for certain, but they have like guarantees of like either pay or like getting used. Like, I know the TSO still do some concerts, right? So the musicians are still getting used. I don't know how much they're getting paid or how the ones that are not used getting paid. The thing is, for freelancer musicians, nothing is guaranteed. So we basically just lost work. We have to resort to teaching. All my friends that are also freelancers are basically teaching most of the time, most for the income. I'm pretty sure we can still perform if we respect those COVID protocols. And if people would hire us for that, everybody would jump on the opportunity. You know, it's weird because except for recordings, I haven't been hired for many live streams. All live streams are basically done by the musician itself themselves. So we basically have to not only perform, but be our own bosses now and hire ourselves, which is fine because we can do it, but it's just a lot of work. And economically, it's really not that viable unless you go viral.
So what have been the most successful things that you've done to bring yourself through COVID, you know, both in terms of your lifestyle, your art, and also economically?
Well, lifestyle-wise, it was hard at the beginning because, you know, it went from 0 to 100, staying home and do nothing. And I live in a basement, so sometimes I don't see the day go by. But what I try to do is have a routine, you know, like everybody else. You take the advice of the government or anything that we can get on the internet. So having a routine really helps. And so I try to run most of the days in the morning and not go to bed later than like midnight. So having a routine is really good. Practicing. I still have a thesis to write. So planning when I write and when I don't write. And that helped a lot. In terms of economically, I had to get more students, a lot more. I used to have maybe 4 per day, per week. Now I have over 10 because that's how I can survive, right?
And do you teach them all online?
Yes.
That's a whole different scenario too, isn't it? Like music teachers having to adapt, demonstrating on instruments, but you can't actually be there. That must be pretty tough.
It's very tough. It's really like sometimes I just wish I was there to correct their position, but you know, it's you have to get really good with your words at describing what they should feel and what they should see and how they should execute it. It took practice, but like it's doable. And the thing, like I said in the beginning, musicians, we're really adaptable, and that's because we're musicians, you know? Like, you'll play, let's say you play an orchestra, you play, like, the theme or whatever, and then the conductor will say, stop, can you play this more like this and this and this, and then we have to do it on the spot, right? That's the whole point of getting an orchestra and being efficient. So we train our lives to be that flexible. And basically, when COVID happened, it was basically like, musicians, be flexible, and like, okay, and then my friend went viral on TikTok. I know people who became just streamers, and I even know people who they started doing almost unrelated, but they started doing transcriptions instead of performing. So not only do we adapt in our teaching, we adapt in everything. And we also have to adapt to the students who prefer whatever platform, right? So I teach on Skype, I teach on Zoom, I teach on even FaceTime. So it's I had to learn all, well, it's not a big learn, but I had to learn how they all work and how to make the most of it for the sound quality and the delay for when I show stuff or when they play for me.
Wow, that's a lot. One thing that I'm very curious about, too, is your string quartet with the rest of your family.
Yeah, so basically, we've been together since 2003, and that's more than 15 years. And I'm the youngest. I have two older sisters, the oldest plays violin, the second oldest plays cello, and then I have one brother who plays the violin. And we played together forever. We had a concert series in Gatineau in our church where we perform a lot. And we had 5 concerts a year, basically, all the time. Plus other concerts if we get hired in the city. But we also, we played in South America, we played in Europe, we played like France, Italy, Colombia. We also performed in the US. Our main country of operation is in Canada, right? We performed a lot in Ontario and a lot in Quebec. Like, we haven't performed together since February, I think. I used to see them at least once or twice a month, and now I see them every 3 months, almost 4 months.
I guess you'd have to make a choice, considering everybody's time is limited and you're probably in different places. With the limited amounts of time we can get together, do you get together with your family for a visit or do you get together with your family for a rehearsal?
It's true. We have to decide that. But usually we combine both, like family and rehearsal, because I'll stay longer to see the family and or stay longer to rehearse more. But with everything that happened, you know, I'm in Toronto, they're all in Quebec, and, you know, it's not advised to travel too much, so I don't travel. And also my brother just had a baby during COVID. Well, his wife had a baby, and the baby is 7 months old now. For me, I would feel bad if, you know, I traveled back to see the baby. God knows, like, I bring something to him. I don't want to be like that, right? So why don't go that much often? And we don't have a reason to perform yet. We don't. So there's no reason for me to go yet. We have a concert plan in December, but that's going to be the first time we get together to play since February.
That was violist Maxime Despax talking about how he's been adapting his musical practice in these difficult times. Since Maxime ended the conversation by talking about his quartet with his brothers and sisters, I'll play you something recorded by the quartet now. Even more special, this piece was written by the Despax family's late father, Emmanuel Despax. Here now is the first movement of Fantasy for String Quartet. It features Maxime and his siblings, Sandrine, Valerie, and Emmanuel. was Fantasy for String Quartet. It features Maxime, Sandrine, Valerie, and Emmanuel Despax. The piece was written by their late father, Emmanuel Despax. Next, we'll hear from Janet Campbell-Sicades, also a string player. Born in Cuba, she's an accomplished soloist, chamber, and orchestral musician. Her skilled and sensitive playing has enabled her to perform not just in some of the most important venues in Cuba, but throughout Europe and the Caribbean. She received her Master's of Music from Memorial University in Newfoundland, and she's currently in the first year of the Artist Diploma Program at the Glenn Gould School at the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto. I started with the question everybody's asking everybody else these days. How are you doing through all this?
Well, I would say pretty good so far. It's a hard time for everyone, but I would say pretty good because I'm healthy and, you know, I have a place to stay and I'm doing just fine. But yeah, it's been a little bit difficult starting with, you know, when COVID, all the outbreak started, I was finishing my master's and I was supposed to do my second year, my final recital. And we couldn't do the recital because of, you know, like it wasn't possible to gather so many people for the recitals. You know, like it wasn't possible also to hold in-person rehearsals with your pianist. So that was, you know, a great impact for my, the ending of my master's. You know, no one was able to do a recital. That was one of the things. Also, you know, like as musicians, we are used to playing in an orchestra, meeting with friends to just play some music or going out a lot. And, you know, that hasn't been possible for a lot of months now. So that's not so great. But yeah, I'm really glad that I'm able to be still at the Glenwood School and they are doing their best to, you know, keep us safe. And, you know, like most of the classes are online. But we have been also, we've been able to have some chamber music rehearsals, you know, with, of course, few people, some in-person lessons. So I think that's been great, you know.
You are a violinist, right? So you're used to playing with large ensembles, like you played with Newfoundland Symphony last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I used to play with a symphony orchestra.
You would have been playing with Newfoundland Symphony when the first COVID wave started coming through, like last March, right?
Yeah, we were rehearsing for a concert and no one knew what was going to happen. We were just expecting to go through with the concerts, but suddenly, you know, everything got suspended and we couldn't go through with the concert. We couldn't do it. So, you know, everyone was disappointed, but anyway, I'm glad, you know, like the government has taken off those, you know, like have put all those restrictions in place to protect us. And that's, you know, what needs to be done. But I mean, you know, as a musician, it's unfortunate because we want to play and we want to make music together.
I would think, too, that the orchestral form is one of the most compromised types of music because it requires a big stage. It requires big audiences. So are you worried and concerned about what is going to happen to orchestral music because of COVID?
Well, I would say a little bit, you know, like at the beginning we were all, I mean, in general, people is try to remain positive and think that this is going to, you know, like pass soon, this is going to be over soon, but who knows? Nobody knows, you know, so like, yeah, but I do have friends who work in professional orchestras and they've been without work for many months, you know, and some of them have had to find some other ways, you know, like to survive and to make music and, you know, like through social media, online projects.
I guess one of the most difficult things with orchestras too is that it's a struggle to get audiences because the cost of putting on an orchestral concert, you need a certain size of hall. So I don't know, like what do you think is going to come of all of this?
Well, yeah, this is very uncertain to me. I'm not completely sure what's going to happen. You know, like, for example, at Glenwood, we were expecting to do a concert. Like last week, we started rehearsing for a concert, and we were hoping to. It wasn't going to be with an audience. We were hoping to record a concert, and you know, like then distribute it through the online platform. But you know, like anyway, we cannot be together that much people in the same room. So I'm not pretty sure what's, you know, what's going to happen. I know, like, when all this started, orchestras started creating projects online where every musician would play their part, would record their part from home, and then they would put everything together. So that's one of the things that people have, like, orchestras have been trying to do to keep the orchestra alive. But yeah, I don't really know how long can that go on, and if it's, you know, if it's something that would work long term.
Right. So what kind, have you been doing a lot of online work and sort of recording for online concerts too, or have you been able to get together with other musicians physically in the same space?
Yeah, I haven't been doing a lot of online things, but I have been able to get together with other musicians. As I mentioned before, we had a first concert with a school orchestra, and we even had an audience. It was a small audience. It would play for the school donors. And anyway, the concert was recorded. It was a great concert. It was recorded, and then they distributed it online. And it was very great. You know, we were all, every musician with their own stand, being like 6 feet away from each other, wearing masks. Even the winds had like this, I think it's like glass sheets in front of them. You know, like each of them was like kind of in a cage. So that was really great. We also didn't use a conductor. So Jonathan Crowe was a concertmaster, and he also kind of directed all the rehearsals and put everything together. So that was great. And, you know, yeah, we were very happy with the concert, but that's what we did. But right now we are not even able to get together. We were having a concert last week, and that's not possible anymore. We are too many to be together in the same room.
And how is this affecting you, not being able to get together with people in the isolation and everything?
Yeah, I would say sometimes it's overwhelming, I would say. But the part that affects me more, if not knowing what's going to happen next, you know, I'm really excited about my program. I'm really super happy to be studying at Glengall and to play with my friends who make music, you know. But yeah, what makes me more nervous is not knowing what's going to happen next, because right now I'm still, you know, we are still having classes, some lessons, and my private lessons are in person at school. Just worried, you know, like we recently went back in the, you know, to lockdown. What happens is school closes, or, you know, if things just get worse. So, but anyway, I'm trying to be positive. You know, whatever happens is going to be fine. And yeah, we are going to survive this.
You're of Cuban background, right?
Yes, I'm from Cuba.
Is your family still back in Cuba?
Yeah, my family lives in Cuba. My mom, my dad, and my brother.
And how are they doing? How are you doing navigating the distances?
Well, I kind of miss them. I miss them a lot. Yeah. My dad was actually asking me to come back for Christmas. Yeah. So we are trying to arrange that so that I can see them. I haven't seen them in like for a year now. So yeah, I miss them a lot. But they are doing fine so far. Yeah. Oh, no. I was going to say that my dad, he works in the Bahamas. So he's still, fortunately, he still has his job. My mom also works in Cuba, and she's still, you know, this regard. Beside of the COVID conditions, she's still working, and I think they are fine, they are healthy, and they are happy to be together.
Do you have other musicians in your family as well?
Yes, my dad. My dad is a violin teacher, so my dad was my first teacher. He was the one who put the violin in my hands and who introduced me to the world of the music. And also my brother. My brother is 20 years old, and he plays violin and viola.
And what are they telling you about how COVID is affecting them, not just their music practice, but that too, but also their lives in general in Cuba?
Well, it's affecting them a lot. You know, they are used to go out. For example, my dad works in the Bahamas. He lives in Cuba, but he works in the Bahamas. He hasn't been able to go back to the Bahamas. You know, he was supposed to go back there for the fall, and he's doing his classes, his lessons online from Cuba, which is good in a way because he gets to stay with the family, you know, but like for his job, like, you know, like the purpose of teaching his students and all that stuff is a little bit harder. Yeah, like my brother also, he just started his first year of university. You know, it's very rare to start your first year of university like from home. Yeah, it's not very nice. But they are doing all fine. They are just healthy, and they are doing well.
What a hard...
They just would like to have me there, too.
What a hard time to be away from home and separated from your family, eh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So what would you say to other musicians, who are maybe struggling with dealing with the pandemic? It's like, what are your survival tips that you could pass on?
Well, I always try to be super positive, you know, it's normal to have sometimes negative thoughts and to feel sad and down sometimes, but just be positive. I try to find things, you know, like the things that made me happy. Exercising has been something that have kept me going through the pandemic, and it helps me keep positive, and it also inspires me to do other things. You know, I start exercising in the morning, and it kind of keeps me going and motivates me to do other things. I like reading, you know, I've been also like taking some online courses. Like I like learning new languages, so I started learning German too, and you know, like practicing violin. Being in touch with friends too. So yeah, I just try to keep positive and try to do the things that sometimes I don't have time to do because I'm too busy, like playing in orchestra or going to school. And yeah.
So you're learning German during.
Yes.
So why German?
Well, I love German. Yeah, I love the language, and I think it. Yeah, I got interested in the German because I went to Germany when I was in Cuba. Doing my undergrad, we went for 15 days to a summer camp, and it was great, you know. And I love the city. We were in Frankfurt, and we were also in Wiesbaden, and I really love those cities. So I was hoping that someday I could go back there. Also, their education system is great. They have really great musicians. So at some point, I was hoping I could, you know, like maybe go there for a course or a summer program, and it would be super helpful if I know how to speak the language. And, you know, also we have all these great composers, you know, classical composers that are from Germany. So it would be very helpful if I knew the language.
Well, yeah, you can pronounce Bach properly, right?
Yeah, right.
A lot of German language used in classical music. So,
yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to share, or something that you, as we're wrapping up this interview?
Well, what I would like to share is that I hope everyone stays well, and people try to be happy and to do things during the pandemic that are going to long term are going to make them better persons, and to stay positive. You know, it doesn't matter what happens. I mean, of course it matters, but to always try to be positive and to think, try to get the
CKUT radio
sound waves in the air.
CKUT
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Yours, they make borders, they hate foreigners, they hate life, they take life, they take rights, and it ain't right, but they don't play and don't play fight. And then they play dumb, I can't play nice when they cake and we stay poor. See, they snakes, we hate war, we hate war, but they hate peace, so we make war and I make peace. That's a great war we were made for, we were not made to just lay dormant. They stay on top, they pay the cops, they take office, they make laws, and then say stop. They say war just makes war, but then take forces when state forces are.
Other than that, I mean, you know, what's going on? What do you say?
Buenas tardes.
And we'll be back.
Missed your favorite show? Not a problem. Go to www.ckut.ca and follow the link to CKUT's easy-to-use archives. Instructions are on the page. 2 months' worth of archives are stored in mono and half a month's worth in stereo.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal.
If you're having trouble, please email sys@ckut.ca. That's sys@ckut.ca.
Oh yeah!
I want to be your motivator.
Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
You're listening to Fallen Angels Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca.